Good evening.
Good evening.
I cannot tell you, I really cannot, how enjoyable this has been. I don't know how you folks aren't just bored to tears listening to me night after night, but for me and my family, it's just been a pleasure to be amongst you. You have been more than kind to us. You have welcomed us into your homes. You welcomed us into your lives. You have given night after night a section of your time to study the Word with me. There's no greater honor, I think, that a preacher can receive than people willing to spend their time studying with him. And so I'm very, very thankful. And I just want you to know from the bottom of my heart and the bottom of my family's heart, we're very grateful for all of you here at South Salem. Tonight is a lesson that I think Jack had pointed out. Well, Jack looked at the title last night and said, "An Infant's View of Eternity." And I think Jack, because I, as a preacher myself, I know what happens. You start thinking about, okay, now what am I going to say? And he couldn't think of what he was going to say. What do you say to that title? What does it even mean? And it's meant to be that way. I meant to use that particular title so that you would say, well, what on earth is he talking about? Your Bible is full of examples of how God created this universe in a way so that you would look at things here on the physical earth and it would teach you a lesson of a greater value. You take the lowly sheep. Why did God make that really stupid animal? Because sheep are really stupid. Sheep are one of the very few animals on this planet that cannot exist if you don't take care of them. They will drown, they will get eaten. I mean, have you ever thought about, almost every single creature on this planet has some sort of natural defense mechanism. What's a sheep going to do, wool them to death? I mean, it's totally helpless without a shepherd. And then you look at your Bible, and how many times does our Lord talk about us as His sheep and Him as the shepherd? Everything on this planet seems to point towards eternal things. Jesus one day took a child, put him on his knee, and he said, "Unless you become like one of these, you shall not see the kingdom of heaven." Children, even that growth process by which we go from infant to adult, you know, God didn't have to make it that way. He didn't have to make it so that a child was in the womb 9 months and then entered into this world. He didn't need to make it so you were small and became big. He could have made it so you're big and become small. He could have made it any way He wanted to, and yet there's a design to it that is unmistakable, and it teaches us some things. And there's a lesson that I'd like to look at tonight about children. In the book of Job, Job says, Naked I came from my... Well, that verse got cut off for some reason. "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return." The Lord, it is really cut off a lot there. But, okay, I'm going to pause for a second because I have a fear right now that the entire PowerPoint's going to be this way. So, here's what I'm going to do. You're going to all just pause with me for half a second. Okay, theoretically we are okay, except for that slide. The problem is it just becomes distracting when you have that the entire time, doesn't it? Okay, so "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return. The Lord gave, and the Lord's taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Job said this. Now, if Job was the only one to say it, you say, well, that's very poetic, Job, but it isn't necessarily a truth, right? Because Job said a lot of things in the book of Job, some true, some not so true, and got him rebuked. But that phrase is repeated in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, it says, "As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again. Naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This also is a grievous evil." Just as he came, so shall he go. This is reiterated twice, this picture that just as a man enters the world with nothing, just like we enter this world coming out of the womb and we come into this universe, this big round ball called Earth, when you leave and go into the next realm, it's going to be very much the same thing. And what it is some imagery built into creation. Like I said, God could have made it so you are born any number of different ways, couldn't he? Children could come from eggs. They do with plenty of other creatures. But instead of the way that God has designed it is with purpose. I want you to think for a second about a baby. While that baby is in the womb and growing, what does that baby know? I mean, what does that baby know about life outside? Can they even begin to comprehend what life out here is like? If you could somehow put a megaphone in there, into the womb, and speak to a child and begin to explain to them, if you could somehow communicate with them in the womb, and you said, I'm going to tell you all about life outside the womb, could you even do it in a way they would comprehend? You begin to talk to them about sights and sounds and the vastness of the world. You say, you're going to go and walk. And they'll say, what's walking? They say, you're going to breathe the fresh country air. And they're going to say, what's country and what's air and what's breathing? And you say, all the colors of a sunset. And what are they going to say? What's a sunset? But before they say that, they're going to say, what's color? And you say, oh, there's so many people that want to meet you. And they're going to say, that's good. What's people? Well, your mother and your father and your siblings. Okay, what's a mother? What's a father? And you say, well, a mother, you're in her right now. Okay. It's not just that they don't comprehend, but if you were given the task and the ability to communicate, they couldn't comprehend. Do you understand that? That what's out here is so beyond the deciphering of a child because there's no experience that they've had that they could properly connect the dots to. What's it like on the other side? Well, here's some things, just some examples. I mean, we could spend all night about the differences between life in the womb and outside of the womb, couldn't we? But just a few things. Well, out here, air is a really big deal. You suck the oxygen out of the room right now, we'd have a major problem. Is air a big deal in the womb? Well, one way you could put it is, yeah, it'd be a big deal if there was air in the womb. They don't want it. Air is a big problem. Food and drink is a big deal now. When you come out of the womb, you're going to seek out food and seek out drink. You're going to get hungry. You're going to get thirsty. Are any of those things that a baby in the womb deals with? No comprehension. Babies have never been hungry in the sense that you and I are out here, where you go a while without a meal and then all of a sudden we get it. Baby is getting a constant flow of all the nourishment from their mother. Now, the mother during the pregnancy, she gets hungry for all sorts of weird things. But the baby is just life. What do you mean food and drink? But all of a sudden they come out here and those are really important. Where they weren't important at all before. Color, taste, smell, all these things become exponentially greater. I imagine, they talk about, I guess sound is a good example of this. They do know that babies hear certain things in the womb. But do you think their hearing in the womb matches anything like you're hearing out here? It's very limited, isn't it? If a baby can smell in the womb, I don't know. I know their olfactory sensors are being developed. I know that they have eyelids and their eyes that are formed, and they can comprehend light. They've shined light in a baby through the mother's stomach, and the baby reacts. So they can see, but does a baby in the womb see to the degree that you see out here? Exponentially greater. So basically, I know what color is. No, you don't know what color is. You don't understand it. Now, I am one in particular who appreciates this because I am colorblind, profoundly so. 2.5% of all colors, that's what I see. 2.5%. Now, that doesn't mean I see in black and white. That doesn't mean things are invisible. I've gotten that one. Can you see me? I'm wearing blue. Yes, you're still there. But my recognition, well, I look at a sunset and it's gorgeous. But my wife in particular, she tears up. I have an app on my phone that will show you how I see the world. And so you can point the camera of the phone at. And I downloaded it. I thought it was really cool. Well, I didn't know what I was seeing because it just looked all the same to me. But my wife, I showed it to her. And you know what she did? My wife began to cry. Just openly weep. And I said, oh, stop that. Okay. Because to her, what I am missing is just profound. Now, I see 2.5% of all colors. How about a baby in the womb? Less than that. So you could say a baby sees. But nah, no. And so all of these things, they may technically exist in the womb, but they are exponentially greater once they leave the room. There are some other things that are deeply important in the womb that cease to be important on the other side, the umbilical cord. Now, while you're in the womb, the umbilical cord is the most important thing to you, right? If you're a baby in the womb, the only thing you really care about is the umbilical cord. It's your life support system. It's the entire spacesuit running all of the things you need, the oxygen, the nutrients, all of these various things. Once a baby comes out of the womb, what's the first thing that we start getting rid of? No more umbilical cord. In fact, it's part of the process so much so that some people say, oh, Daddy, do you want to cut the cord? And we make a big deal out of it. Out here, how many of you miss your umbilical cord? Lie awake at night. It was so good. And they just took it. They didn't even ask. No, you don't care. You're doing a big deal. The umbilical cord's gone. My youngest daughter, when she was born at 2 pounds. She was born at 26 weeks gestation. 2 pounds. She missed an entire third trimester. And because of that, she had some problems. And one of them required heart surgery. And what it was something that every single baby has. It's called the arteriosus ductus. And in the womb, you don't use your lungs. Everything comes through the umbilical cord. So your blood flow skips the lungs. Normally in adults, when we breathe in, the oxygen comes into your lungs, and your lungs are constantly being bathed and surrounded by blood that's picking up that oxygen to then travel it through the rest of your body. Well, you don't do that in the womb because you're not breathing, so you have this little passage. It's like a little side duct called the arteriosus ductus. And the moment you breathe your first breath, child comes in the world and goes, that first one, they make them cry, spank the kid. Welcome to the world, right? And they make that first cry, and that thing slams shut. And you never use it again, and the flow begins to go through your lungs. Well, because of the way that she was born in prematurity, hers was left open. And not only was it something that was unnecessary, it was detrimental. She wouldn't gain weight. She was not getting a proper amount of oxygen. For any of you who work in the medical field, her blood oxygen level was typically around 70%. It's a very low level. Most of us exist at 98 to 100%. That's normal. blood oxygen level. And so they had to go in there, and she was on oxygen, and then we had to get her to gain weight, and I've aged considerably. Whatever age I die at, you take 10 years, and you say, that's where he should have died, but that's what he lost because he was waiting for his daughter to have surgery. And they went in, and they closed that thing up. Now, that's a very long way of saying the arteriosus ductus is fundamental and essential for life in the womb. Outside of the womb, not only is it not essential, it's detrimental. Do you understand that? You see that idea? In the womb, there are these things that are vital that once we leave the womb, they become totally unnecessary. The dimension, the scale, all of these things are different. When you're in the womb and you talk about something that's big, and then you come out of the womb and you talk about something that's big. A little different, right? A little baby in the womb says, oh, it's so big in here. At 8 months along, I can now really move around. There's lots of room in this mansion. Baby comes out of the womb and says, here, let's get on an airplane and let you look at the fields down below. That's big. Everything changes when you come out of the womb. Philippians chapter 1, verse 23. Paul, when speaking about death, he says, my desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. Now, in the Greek, don't worry, we're not going to have a Greek lesson to bore you half to death. But in the Greek, what happens there is it's something called reduplication, where you only needed one word. You could just say it's better. But reduplication, in particular in Greek, is this thing that it's saying it's not just very better, but it's so better, beyond better, you can't even comprehend how much better it is. In Christ, when you die, Paul says to live is Christ, but if I die and I go to be with Christ, that's so much better, you can't even begin to glimpse it. Beginning to see the connection between in the womb and out of the womb? Job says, when I leave this world, it'll be just like when I entered it. I came into it from a womb environment, and then I entered this world, and it was beyond my comprehension. Here is like a womb. And then one day we as Christians die, and do you have any idea what's on the other side? God talks about it, but even as he talks about it, you can tell it's. Look, you can't understand it, but I'm going to tell you a couple things so you get a little excited. And then you and I die, and we're going to go, I had no idea. I had no idea. And there's going to be some things that we're warned we really should prepare for here, because there is one difference between a baby in the womb and you in the womb of life here, is that a baby in the womb really isn't told to do any sort of cognitive preparations for it. You don't communicate with the baby and say, okay, I need you to get ready. There's going to be some things. You might want to practice your ABCs, because they're going to want to teach you that at some point. No, they don't do that. You don't worry about it. They just grow. God takes care of it entirely. But here on earth, when we're in this womb, waiting to be born into that next life, God does say there are some things that you might want to know ahead of time. And so let's look at a couple of those things. One of them is he tells us sin is a bigger deal there. Now, this is just like oxygen and food and drink for a baby. In the womb, oxygen, food, drink, not a big deal whatsoever. They don't worry about it. Not a major problem for them at all. But then you come out of the womb and it's huge. In this world right now, when you sin, if you decide to lie on your taxes and save $5, how big of a deal is that? That's what they call being American. People do it every day. It's no big deal. It's expected. It's not surprising. If you tell what we often call a little white lie. Your wife says, honey, does this dress make me look nice? And you go, sure. When in fact you're thinking, no. Well, it's just a little white lie. Is it a big deal? No, in fact, it might be beneficial to you. My wife and I finally agreed that we didn't want me lying, but I had to find something better than just no. And so we went with, it does not accentuate your beauty. That one's free of charge, men. We sin all the time. And there are some sins that are a big deal that will ruin your life. They'll make you unhappy. You'll have regrets the whole time. But there are many sins that people do on a regular basis. No big deal. But Romans chapter 6 down in verse 23 says the wages of sin is death. That's not physical death. That's spiritual death. And when you go to a spiritual realm, it's going to be a big deal. Right now, you can slough it off. Who cares? As long as I'm getting away with it, as long as it makes me happy. And it, of course, isn't that exactly what we do? That's why we sin in the first place. People don't sin here on earth because it makes them unhappy. They sin on earth because they think, oh, this will fulfill me. It'll cut the edge off of my struggles. It'll make me popular. It will give me fulfillment. It'll be whatever it is we tell ourselves. And it's enticing here. And it's enticing because sometimes, at least temporarily, it does those very things we were hoping for. But in the spiritual realm, all of a sudden sin becomes the only thing that's talked about. If you have sin, you're dead. If you don't have sin, you're alive. Love is a bigger deal. And I'm not just talking about romantic love. We're talking about agape, biblical, love your enemies, that kind of love, sacrificial love, the kind of love that put Jesus on the cross. That is a bigger deal. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, down in verse 13, as you go through all this description in 1 Corinthians 13 about love. Love is this and love is that. Love doesn't parade itself. Love is kind. All of these things. Now, then at the very end of it, as you go down, we're told that after the Bible's completed, you don't need any more prophecy, no more miracles, no more speaking in tongues. Those are all done because you have a complete and perfect Bible. But there will be three things that abide amongst God's people after miracles end. And those three things are faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. You know why love is the greatest of those? Faith is belief and evidence of something not seen. That's what Hebrews says. When you get to eternity, you won't need faith anymore because you'll see God. Hope is a desire and expectation of something you have not received yet. When you get to eternity, you won't hope anymore. You'll have it. But love, there's still going to be love in heaven. Faith will end and hope will end, but love, it abides forever. It's the greatest of these. What you're going to find is that love, which is something everybody talks about, but few people really apply themselves to. I know our society talks about love a lot, but most of the time when we talk about love, what we're really talking about is that mushy feeling you feel for somebody of the opposite gender. We talk about the feeling. What your Bible talks about it, it talks about selflessness and sacrifice. It talks about the willingness to put others in preference before yourself. And that is not something our society talks very much about at all. It is a me, me, me society, not a you, you, you. But when you get to heaven, one of the things that'll make heaven heaven is that idea that everybody shows preference to one another in love. And it begins from the one who'll be at the center of that new heaven and new earth, the Lord. So right now, oh, live for you. Don't worry about other people. Love yourself. Make sure you have some me time. Over there, that attitude of selfishness will be the worst thing ever. And sacrifice, which is often laughed at and treated as a mockery, that sort of sacrificial love will be all important over there. Health. You take the idea of health. on this planet, how much money do Americans spend on a healthcare system? It's not in the billions, it's in the trillions. Okay, trillions is a number with a lot of zeros behind it. And we will continue to spend money on that. If you want a steady career, head to the medical field, because people are still going to be having health problems 100 years from now and 200 years from now. As long as there's an earth, there's going to be people who need doctors and medicine and various things like that. Because here on earth, health is huge, isn't it? How do I add another year to my life? Even down to beauty products, that's a form of health care, isn't it? Us trying to get our bodies to preserve themselves to look like an age that we aren't. That's all about us trying to chase that everlasting fountain of youth here on earth. And people do it and do it and do it, and we continue to have health problems and we see our health deteriorate. But on the other hand, 1 Corinthians chapter 15 says, when you get to eternity, what kind of a body will you have? Immortal body. In 1 John chapter 3, down in verse 2, it tells us that that body that you will be given, he says, when you see Jesus descend, you'll know how you'll be, because you will see him as he is. You will recognize, oh, that's what our bodies are going to be like, and you're not going to worry about health care anymore. There are no insurance policies for health in eternity. That's just not how it works. Work, food, security, pleasure, beauty, all of these things will be redefined. Now, those are all terms you're familiar with. Do you know what work is down here on earth? Do you know what food is and security? Do you know what beauty is or pleasure? All of those things are terms that we're familiar with, but kind of familiar with the same way a baby is familiar with sound and sight and color while it's in the womb. It knows what it is, but it has no idea what it is. If you go to Revelation chapter 21 and chapter 22 and you look at that very brief explanation of what eternity with God will look like, you begin to see very quickly there will be work to do, but it's not going to be work with the sweat of the brow. Can you imagine going to work and it be entirely fulfilling and you never get tired? There's no busy work. There's no boss to bug you and ask you to be micromanaged. There's no tasks that come up because the customers are ridiculous. There's nobody complaining and murmuring, and everything about what you do is fulfilling. Every task, every little bit, you go, I'm just so happy that I get to do this. Can you imagine work like that? Where you're just downright giddy. That's what we have in heaven without sin, without the sweat of the brow, and without thorns. Food, we're told that we get to eat from the tree of life. I've eaten some very good food, in particular this week. My scale does not thank you. But when you taste from the tree of life, and it describes it as this tree that has 12 different fruits on it, all the different times and seasons to it, when you eat from that tree, can you even begin to comprehend what that's going to taste like? It's food, okay, great, but not in a caliber we're even anywhere close to being familiar with. Jesus Christ even uses that with the idea of the gospel. He says, come, he said to the Samaritan woman, drink from this. I'll give you water to drink, and it'll be water when you drink it. What will happen? You're never going to thirst again. Have you ever had that happen with water here on earth? And yet I tell you, you'll be entirely satisfied with the water that God provides in the river of life. All of these things are different. Pleasure, there's plenty of pleasure in heaven, but it's very, very different than the pleasure that we have here. There's beauty in heaven, but it's entirely different than the beauty that we have here. And so what I want you to begin to do is to think about in your life, since right now I'm in the womb, since right now I'm living my life here and there are certain things that are super important to me but I'm told are not going to be important then, get prepared for that time. Right now, sin's not a problem. Plenty of people sin. Everybody sins. All I have to do is make sure I'm better than the guy next to me, right? My light shines brighter when yours goes out. It's fine. No problems. But in eternity, it won't be that way. So who are you going to be? Are you going to be somebody who plans on being here forever or somebody who plans for there? The reason that Jesus Christ came to die was for your sins. If sins were only the kind of problem they are here on earth, forget about it. It's about the problem that they're going to be for eternity. What kind of people are we? Are we people living as if we're going to stay in the womb forever? Or are we preparing for the day the labor pains come? If love is this defining characteristic of eternity, we're told that you can store up treasures for yourself in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys, or you can store up treasures for yourself here on earth where moth and rust do destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, you've got to make a decision, don't you? Now, the easiest thing in the world is to prepare for a place that you're familiar with. And that's what the average person does. They say, well, I'll make sure that I have all of the things for food, security, pleasure, and whatnot here on earth, because here's where I am and where I'm familiar with. What God has asked you to do by faith is to recognize there's a place you're going that is completely unfamiliar. And then he gives you some roadmaps that the things that you do here that many people could care less about will be infinitely greater value there. And before you go, well, could it really be that different? We go back to the analogy that we are given in both Job and Ecclesiastes. If you were to talk to a baby in the womb and try and explain to them how different it is, and the baby said, could it really be that different? What would you say to them? You have no idea. You have no idea how different it's going to be. I can't even begin to tell you, but I just want you to get prepared for some things that you are not used to. I just want you to know it's going to be very, very different. And it's going to be richer and more beautiful and more complete. And I know that really the easiest thing for you to do is to just think about how you might like a shelving unit there in the womb for some of your books. But I'm telling you, don't feather your nest there. How many of us, and I speak to myself first, how many of us spend our whole lives feathering our nest here when we are told quite clearly that just like you came into this world naked, you go into that world naked. When you came into this world, you were completely dependent upon other people taking care of you and providing for your needs here on earth. And in some way, shape, or form, every one of us is a little bit different. They did that, didn't they? Because you're here. Everything that you currently have, even the very clothes on your back, were at some point not yours. You didn't have any of it. But it worked out okay, didn't it? You're here. When you and I die, we don't get to take any of this stuff that's so important to us here with us. We go into that realm naked and we're completely dependent upon our parent to provide. Do you believe he'll do it? You're going to enter there naked. All that you need to do right now is make sure you know and are prepared to meet your Father. That's it. Make sure that God is your Father. How many times in the Gospels do you see both John the Baptist and Jesus talking about, you are a son of the devil? John put it, you're a brood of vipers. That is, vipers have broods, so you're a nest of vipers. That means you came from vipers. Jesus says, you are liars, and you do it just because you're just like your father, the prince of lies. You get to pick your father. And so who's it going to be? Because when you get to the other side of death, you're going to meet your father, whichever one you've picked. And one father has said, Come into my arms, enter into comfort. I will give you peace. Come and join in paradise. I will watch over you. I'll take care of all your needs. Put on a robe of white. All of these things. He provides all of these things. The other father does not care one whit about you, and you go to his realm, which is a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth, where people cry and they're angry. Just like coming into this world, you are completely dependent upon people. Going into the next world, you're going to be completely dependent upon God. You don't get to bring any of it with you. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, starting at verse 1, it says, "Now concerning the times and the seasons, brothers, you have no need of anything to be written to you. For you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying there's peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape." There's one other detail about being in the womb that is analogous, is parallel. It's a parable, a living parable created by God to you going to the eternal realm. And that is, babies do not get to choose when they're born, do they? That poor little child is sitting there in the womb, perfectly comfortable, just everything is the right temperature, the HVAC system's working just great, food is piped in directly, they're sitting there lulled by this throbbing, what we know as the heartbeat, but I don't know, they think of it as a sound system, right? And everything's just right, we're kind of floating along and everything's good, and then all of a sudden, their entire world, not just their house, their entire world goes, whoa, what was that? Well, I'm glad that's gone. 5 minutes later, boom, again. And then it gets more and more intense until finally the child is ejected from its world into a whole new world. Does it have any choice in the matter? It will happen. Labor pains come suddenly, and the child's not ready for it. According to that child, they would like to go to college there. Everything is fine in their world. They don't want to change it. They are entirely at peace with the circumstance. You and I, have you ever noticed the hilarity of the fact that we as human beings spend our whole life finally figuring out how to live here? You know, by the time you hit that 80 years, that's kind of, as the Bible calls it, that place of great strength. 80 years. If you make it to 80 years, by strength. You should have gained at that point some wisdom. You got the gray hair to prove it, or no hair at all. And so you are able to say, yeah, I finally know how this world works. I'm pretty good at this. I've got this whole thing settled in and squared away. I know how to handle things I didn't know how to do before. I've really grown up, and you know what? I finally got it figured out, and then wham! You're ejected from this world. And you get no say-so in it. You get no say-so in the timing of it. You get no say-so in the way that it happens. You cannot stop it. It will occur. And so just when you got good at this whole living thing, you have to start over. That is exactly like a baby in the womb. I finally got this place comfortable. I've been pushing for room for a while, and now finally this space is just right. We're told that just when men and women get to the point where they say peace and security, and then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. And then verse 4 tells you the key to the whole thing. And this is the verse I'm going to leave you with tonight. Verse 4 says, "But you are not in darkness. You are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief." The one difference between a baby in the womb and us is that the baby in the womb is surprised by it. They don't know what's coming. Nobody tells them. We don't expect them to know. But you and I have been given a warning. We've been said, look, it's going to happen. It's going to happen at a time that nobody knows. It'll come like a thief in the night. But you, on the other hand, don't need to be surprised by this, brethren. You know who your father is. He's warned you ahead of time that it's going to happen. So I want you to take a deep breath and prepare for that day. So that whenever it comes, you go, okay, I've never been there before. And I know it's going to be completely different. And I know things that I have taken for granted here will just simply cease to exist. I know things that are really important to me now, I won't even think about then. And then other things that don't seem like such a big deal to me right now, but God says are very clearly a big deal, will be everything then. So you have a choice, right? Who's your father? How are you going to live? We know that it is common. It happens every day. Every second, there's a baby born. People moving from unfamiliar to from familiar to unfamiliar happens every single day. Every second, there's a baby being born. Every second, there's somebody dying. And it's just this big conveyor belt. But you, brethren, be not surprised. My encouragement to you, my exhortation, is that regardless of your age, be ready for the pangs, the birth pangs of death. Because it will happen. And you don't know when, you don't get to decide. I had people I went to high school with that just all of a sudden died one day. One of them died in a car wreck, another one had organ failure. Another one, this is a true story. It's a guy I went to high school with. He was sitting in his fiance's college graduation ceremony out in the stands, some big stadium. He was sitting there watching her graduate, and the wedding was set. They'd said, okay, as soon as we both graduate, he graduated already, and once she graduated college, we're going to have this wedding. And so the venue was set and they'd picked the place settings and they'd had the guest list all put together, and he's sitting there watching his future bride walk and receive her college diploma, and he had a brain aneurysm and died in the stands. All of a sudden she was receiving, in the process of her receiving her college diploma, the whole thing was stopped, and EMTs are coming in and everything, and everybody's wondering, oh, what's going on? And she's just like, oh, what's going on? Oh, something up in the stands. You don't know. You don't know when it'll happen. You don't know how. But don't be surprised by it. Birth pangs are going to happen. And they're going to happen at a time when you weren't expecting, when you weren't prepared for it, in terms of you were comfortable enough for it to happen. There are people who go through life and they live a very long life and they say, I really want to die, and then keep living. And there are people who want to keep on living and then they die. You just don't get to decide on these things. But don't be surprised by them. You're going to move from an area you are familiar with here on earth to an unfamiliar territory, and the only thing will matter is who's your father to receive you when you enter into that world. I'm so thankful for the time. Thankful for you and the time that you've given. Life is so very short. And you know that as well as I do. And you've chosen to spend a portion of that life here together, studying God's Word. What a blessing. What a taste of heaven to be together as God's people. If you're not a Christian yet, you're not ready for that journey. If you've been thinking about it, and you've counted the cost, and you know it's time to stop procrastinating, stop putting it off, let today be the day of your salvation. We'd love to baptize you tonight, put you in God's people, prepare you to meet your Father. And if you are a Christian who's not been right with the Lord, and you want to get right, you want to get back on track, this is an opportunity for you to get all these lovely people who care about your soul to begin to pray for you and support you in whatever way possible. If we can help you with either of those things, please come forward as we stand and sing number 22. Holy.